A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
She was just like, oh, which speculum should I use, to the woman, and was like looking at all the different ones, and I was just there,
smallest
like,
one, smallest
and, you know,
one.
Normally they're like, put your legs, you know, up and then sort of splay them apart like a little frog.
Yeah.
I was being manoeuvred around. Like, I've not had my legs grabbed in a and sort of put into various different positions so that you could see things properly. That was weird. And then, long story short, there had to be multiple speculum attempts. Because she kept being like, I can't see it, I've just got vaginal wall. And like really freaking out. And then the woman was like, it's okay, calm down, you just got the wrong angle. And I was just like, hello. It was so bad. It was so bad. Yeah, okay. She said, secondly, Hol, I love you, but I need you to put some respect on Masquerade from Phantom of the Opera. Absolute banger. Sometimes you just got to agree to disagree with the people you love the most. Oh. My choir concert was actually a roaring success, guys, but I'll have to tell you all about it another time. And Masquerade, you know what, Samantha May? Masquerade did actually go down pretty well.
Can you give us a couple of notes from Masquerade?
Oh, God. Well, as a soprano in it, it goes, Masquerade!
Christ.
I know. I was hamming that up a little bit, but genuinely, it's screech-a-thon. Masquerade! Paper faces on parade! Masquerade! It's horrible. Sorry, Samantha May. Hate it.
Welcome to episode 190 of the Women's Running Podcast. I'm your host, Esther Newman, and she's your other host, Holly Taylor. On this podcast, we talk about health, politics, stuff on TV, and what we ate last night. Occasionally, we talk about running. This episode has a trigger warning. We're talking about sexual attacks and attempted rape. Please switch off now if this will affect you. And for more information, go to rapecrisis.org.uk, which has lots of support and advice. We've got some very big topics to discuss on the podcast today. We start off on smear tests and the stuff we have to go through, but there are a couple of very big things that have been on our radar. So please don't listen in if you know you're going to find any of the content triggering at all. We talk about the recent news of Alison Walker, who was attacked while on a run in Portugal. We spoke to Alison last week, more of which here, but since then it's been at the front of our minds. How can we make running more safe for women without imposing curfews or asking us to change our behaviour? I would love to know what you think. We then move on to the latest news about Jasmine Paris and the Barclay Marathons, because we couldn't not before moving on to your letters. We've got way too much to talk about in this episode, that's for sure. Now, if you don't already subscribe to Women's Running Magazine, we've got a Pod Squad offer for you lovely people. Hop along to womensrunning.co.uk/podsquad and you'll be able to get your mitts on Women's Running for just £3.50 an issue, saving 42% off the cover price. The subscription is totally risk-free and flexible. You don't need to sign up for years and years, so it's the perfect way to get loads more Women's Running fun times for pennies.
This episode is sponsored by Revive Active, and this is really exciting for us because...
I think I know this. So, is that the lovely orangey stuff that I've seen Eilish McColgan drinking?
Yes! Eilish is about the best ambassador you can get, and frankly, anything she's taking, I'm going to take too.
Yeah, I'm definitely on board with that. Tell us more.
Well, what Revive Active do brilliantly is a range of supplement powders that you dissolve in water for a super tasty drink, with the added benefits of a whole range of good things to nourish your body.
So I have tried and I'm a big fan of Zest Active. That's the veggie version. Firstly, it tastes of orange squash. Secondly, it perks me up after lunch. And thirdly, it is scientifically formulated with 25 active ingredients to support energy, brain and muscle function and the immune system, with 12 vitamins, 4 amino acids and soluble dietary fiber. It's the easiest and tastiest way to top up your nutrients, and you get a little zhuzh of energy.
And because where I am in life, let's not delve too deeply there, the one I take on a daily basis is Joint Complex, but it's not just for joints. This has 10 active ingredients that I don't think I can pronounce, including collagen, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid, supporting cartilage, bones, and muscle function. Perfect for aging crones like me, but also elite athletes like you.
Yes, and like me, of course. The best news is that you can get 20% off the whole Revive Active range at reviveactive.com using the code RUN20, which you can use right up until 30th of April.
So don't miss out, Pod Squad. If you like a supplement but can't be bothered to wang back a tablet, then this is for you. Use that code RUN20 before the end of April at reviveactive.com. We always knew we had something in common with Eilish McColgan.
Yeah, and that's why the three of us are just the best of pals.
54 minutes because I've got to go. I've got the worst morning.
Okay, should we talk about it on pod? Do you want to tell me about it?
Okay, I'm going to tell you about it.
Okay.
Okay, so first of all, I have missed the kids' Easter service. So that's number one. Done that.
Was that supposed to be this morning?
That's currently ongoing, I
believe. Oh, sorry.
It's not your fault, is it? It's my fault because I put in time to record this podcast now at an ungodly hour, an hour in which we normally are just blinking ourselves awake like little dormice.
I know, I'm actually already on my second coffee of the day.
I haven't even had one. And the reason I've not had one is because my next appointment after this is at the hygienist. And then I'm going back to the physiotherapist and then back home.
So it's time to get poked and prodded.
Poked and prodded. I'm going to have all sorts. The hygienist is going to be horrific. I even had my dentist 2 weeks ago and he said, oh, I'm going to put a note on your file to ask them to give you a bit of local anaesthetic before they get going. Because my gnarled teeth are so bad that they really need to dig under the gums.
It's quite painful going to the hygienist. I'm not going to lie, of course, I've never been to the hygienist. Look at me.
I can't even, it's horrible. Yeah, you can sort of feel it in your bones. It's not nice.
Oh dear.
I was
going to say, actually, this brings me on. I've not really told you, I don't think, about my smear test.
Oh, come on. Let's talk about all the appointments this week. What's going on? How was it?
So, speaking of being poked and prodded, I had...
Oh, actually, can I just interrupt? Very slightly. Just because I know that you can talk about smear tests, but I have to say that I was ever so slightly age traumatized when you were talking about the fact that you were going to go and have it, and it was going to be your second ever one.
It was my second ever one.
And it felt like in that moment that you said it, it felt all my smear tests came back to haunt me in a big kind of ha-la-la-la-la-la filmic episode. I was like, I've had fucking thousands of, it feels like not actually had thousands. But I think like when I first started having smear tests, it was such a long time ago that they recommended that we started really early. Like I think my first, I was maybe 18, maybe 19. Mm. And then you'd have them every 3 years.
Yeah. So I think I have them every three. I think it was 25 was the first one. And then, not to brag, but I didn't have HPV. So I only have them every three. But I think if you do have HPV, if there's any abnormalities and you have to have them more regularly, like maybe every year or something.
I don't even know what HPV is because I'm too old.
I don't really.
Was it the vaccine?
I had the vaccine for it when I was in school, I remember. Because I remember mainly wanting to make a big fuss about the fact that my arm was numb and being like, oh, I can't write today. Oh, it was so painful. Oh, you boys would never understand our numb arms. That was the main memory I have of it.
Well, we didn't have that. We had one for rubella. I remember that was a girl only one, but we all got our jabs, our BCG jabs for tuberculosis.
Oh, the ones that leave a little crater.
Yeah. Do you even have that now?
Because I don't have
it. But smallpox, isn't it?
Yeah, I think Doug has it. Weirdly, yeah. I don't. So maybe it was just on the cusp where you could sort of choose whether you were going to have it or not.
Because you're consumptive.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, the smear test, right?
I was going to tell you about my smear. So, I guess I have only had two. The first one was absolutely fine because I remember being super nervous about it. First smear. And if you are listening to this and you are putting off having a smear test, yes, they are so weird and gross. And I don't want this to put you off, but also it really is 2 seconds and then it's done. And then you're all good, or you know that you need to go back or whatever. So definitely go and do it. But I don't think loads of people listening, we talk about our vaginas all the time. I think most of us are pretty chill, but if there is anybody who's got smear fear, then go for it. The first time I remember being so anxious and I was like, oh my goodness, I've never had to show my vulve to a medical professional before. Yeah. And so I was really anxious about it, but it was like 2 seconds long. We talked about RuPaul's Drag Race the whole time, me and the nurse. Nice. And it was like, this time I was sort of not really expecting it to be a big deal. Got in and the nurse was a gynecologist who is obviously quite experienced. She did my coil, I remember, and she was even though that was traumatic as fuck, she was very nice about all of it. So it was her and I was like, sweet, I've got lovely, won't say her name probably for NHS reasons, the gynecologist, she's going to do it, great. And then she went, so I've got a trainee coming today if that's all right. And she was obviously like, you know, explaining that she would still be there and it would all be okay. And I was a bit like, I don't mind that she's a trainee. It's more just the fact that I don't really want loads of people in the room standing around. You don't really want to feel outnumbered when you're naked, do you?
No.
One-on-one is embarrassing enough, but if more people in the room have their clothes on than you, it's like, oh God. I was a bit like, but she was like, oh, honestly, she's really lovely and sympathetic and like, you know, she's not the sort of person, she understands how sensitive it is for people and like, she'll be fine. So I was like, okay, whatever, let's just do it. And I'm absolutely, disclaimer, not slagging off this woman. It's so important that, which is why I was like, of course, in the end, because it's so important that people do get trained up to be able to do this stuff properly. So I'm not slagging off the process of having trainees do it. But from the off, I was like, because she was like, she was just like, oh, which speculum should I use, to the woman? And was like looking at all the different ones. And I was just there.
Smallest one.
Normally they're like, put your legs, you know, up and then sort of splay them apart like a little frog.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was being maneuvered around. Like, I've not had my legs grabbed in a, and sort of put into various different positions so that you could see things properly. That was weird. And then, it was, long story short, there had to be multiple speculum attempts. because she kept being like, I can't see it. I've just got vaginal wall, and like really freaking out. And then the woman was like, it's okay, calm down. You just got the wrong angle. And I was just like, hello. It was so bad. Oh, God. And it wasn't her fault. She was just learning. And she was really sympathetic to me. But I could also see that she was like so flustered. She was like, I can't see it. I can't see it. The gynecologist then, he was like, it's okay, just do that, there it is. And I was, oh God, it was so...
Did you find yourself trying to calm her down as well?
I was a bit like, it's okay, don't worry, don't rush. But obviously I was like, really looking forward to having my pants back on. And she was like, I can see it's really painful for you. And I was like, darling, it's not. The noises I'm making are excruciating, mortifying awkwardness, not pain. Because I think I was just kind of going like, the whole time.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry. I shouldn't be laughing. This sounds
It's funny. It wasn't funny on the day. I was actually feeling slightly like, you know, when you're walking around a bit like, hello, darkness, my old friend. I was kind of having that on the day. But now I'm like, it's okay.
Was there any point when you were lying there with various speculums in various positions, did you ever think to yourself, content?
I kind of actually, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like...
Good for you.
And I was feeling like, God, the burden of womanhood is unpleasant, but maybe I'll get some sympathy points out of this from the other half. You know, the trouble we all go to just to exist.
Yeah. And did you get any sympathy points?
A little bit. He was like, sounds really hard.
Yeah. They just don't understand in the same way. Like I do make it a point now to explain to Dave if I'm having a really bad period. But I guess because, and it's not their fault. They literally cannot sympathize, can they?
Yeah.
Because they can't empathize. So you do just get a sort of slightly cocked head and a kind of,
Yeah.
But it's kind of in the same way that they would do it if you had a headache or a stomach ache or something. It's like, no, you've got no. A bad period is everything, isn't it? It's just everything. It's
yes,
like,
and I'm extra angry because of the fact that it's not your fault, but you will never experience this. So it's not like, oh, please, can I have some sympathy because I've got a bit of a headache? We both understand what a headache is like, and we can be sympathetic to each other for that when that happens. Like, I think that's the thing that just, actually, I was feeling enraged by, I've been feeling, general theme of this week is feeling enraged by the burden of womanhood. I was feeling enraged because I saw this thing about, let me see if I can find it. But there was this thing that I saw on Instagram about coil pain.
Oh.
I saw it yesterday.
While it's there?
Yeah. No, not while it's there, sorry. This is non-smear related now. This is just having the insertion done. Insertion.
Ooh, you know what I mean? Yeah. Yes, I do. I do. I do.
So horrible, and we talked about it a lot of the time. And again, if anybody is thinking about getting a coil who's listening, I do feel a responsibility to say it is an excellent form of birth control, and it's a shame that women's pain around the actual insertion of it is so minimized, because if we dealt with that properly, then you got 5 years of not having to worry about any of that pregnancy malarkey. So it's really good. But I read this thing that was basically like, I can't find it, so I'm sorry if I don't get the stats exactly right, but it was along the lines of a bunch of women were surveyed after having their coil inserted, and a lot of these women as well had given birth, which I know doesn't make it, like, some people still experience excruciating pain even if they've given birth, but more women might find it a bit more comfortable if they haven't, you know what I mean? This was not asking a huge amount of women who hadn't actually given birth. They rated on average the pain about 65 out of 100 for the pain of what it was like having it inserted on a general pain scale. And I think it was like the providers of the IUDs I don't know, whoever's out here, big IUD. rated the pain as 35, just like completely just disregarded, like halved the amount of pain that these women in the survey said that they were in.
Oh my God.
I know.
And that's a shocker.
Scandal. And then as a result, I've seen that it's a bit of a trend at the moment on Instagram and TikTok and stuff. More women have been recording themselves having it inserted. And obviously it's really uncomfortable to watch somebody, but they've been just like straight up recording their reactions and being like, how's this for a 35 out of 100? I'm screaming in blood-curdling pain.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That it's not fun. It's not fun.
It's really not fun. It's really not fun. Yeah, yeah, but they still, as far as I'm aware, I know that some people say that you can have it, you can be like numbed, but I'm pretty sure that one of my friends who had it inserted did opt for the numbing. And because it's local anaesthetic that's through an injection anyway, like that was very painful still. And I think that she said that she could still feel most of what was going on. But it's really bad. It's so bad. It makes me so angry that people minimize women's pain all the time. And that just was such a stark example. They still are like, take an ibuprofen. That is what the majority of healthcare people will say about going and having a coil fitted. And for a lot of people, I would say that that's probably the most pain I've ever been in my life so far, which maybe makes me quite lucky, but
at the same time, I think it's something that is recommended. It's recommended for women post birth as an effective form of what am I trying to say? Contraception.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing.
It's very early, everybody.
It is early.
I'm very angry.
Yeah, but I think it's like, and it is effective, and that's great. I think, but it was probably for me one of not the insertion, which I can't really remember that much, but definitely the removal of it was up there as a kind of a slightly traumatic experience. Yeah. I had to have gas and air, so it was, you know, the last time I'd had gas and air had been 2 months previously when I'd had my son. Yeah, it was just. So I guess all of that conflated a little bit, but yeah, it wasn't fun times. It wasn't happy fun times.
Yeah.
But yeah.
No, anyway. Not very nice. Not very nice at all. And let's stop minimizing the pain of women. Actually, a very good podcast recommendation. There is a This American Life series called The Retrievals, which is all about that. It's about women who had retrieval for like IVF and stuff at this particular clinic where, well, spoiler alert, go and listen to it because it's really good, but spoiler alert, it was one of the staff had been replacing the fentanyl or whatever it was, the pain medication they were using for it, with saline solution. So all these women were undergoing this treatment completely without any pain relief.
Oh,
and they
God.
Were like screaming and being like, is this what it's supposed to feel like? Like, I'm not doing okay. And all the doctors were just like, they didn't, the root of the issue really, obviously, it's also a terrible tragedy about the opioid pandemic and everything as well. But also like the main problem was that these doctors were just like not really listening to the women. They were like, oh, well, you know, nearly done. And they were like, you are sticking a fucking needle into my insides and I can feel every fucking second of it. And they just weren't
It
took months for them to realize that they were doing this procedure with no pain relief because they just weren't listening to the patients.
Bloody hell. Oh my God.
Anyway, welcome back.
Where were we? Welcome back. Sorry. That was me getting really, really worried about notifications popping off on my Mac. And I don't think we will see when I listen back to this, and if it's like pa-ching, pa-ching every 5 minutes.
I don't think they come through because I always worry about this when we're doing the pod, and I don't think they come through. It's actually our women's running chat popping off because everybody's achieved a lot this week.
Yeah, it's my fault. I shouldn't have asked the question in the first place. What a twonk. Anyway.
Next time, everyone, shut up about your achievements.
Yeah, exactly. Look, I tell you what, we had a couple of we had two or three like really, really big things we were going to talk about today, didn't we? And I think talking about female repression, I think we should move on to all these things because we've got We've got a couple of like really important things, I think, to talk about. And I think let's talk about the first and most awful and most complicated one first. Let's have a chat about that, because mm-hmm. I think that's worth a chat, isn't it? And that's about Alison Walker, who she's a cover star from the magazine from a couple of years ago. And I follow Alison on Instagram. And it was like 10 days ago, I think. She posted a really shocking thing on Instagram. So if anyone hasn't seen it, I guess this is, we need to do a bit of like a trigger warning here.
Because this is definitely trigger warning territory, isn't it? It was quite difficult to read.
It was really difficult to read. So this is triggering for anyone who might not want to listen to conversations about rape or attempted rape. So Alison had been training in Portugal, and she'd been training in a running camp. She's a bloody good runner, and she'd been training there, and lots of people go to this running camp. But there's actually kind of quite a cluster of running camps around there. So this isn't kind of pointing fingers at specific running camps at all. She was just at one of a number.
I was going to say, I also do think it's important that she did draw attention to where it happened, because I think, like, you know, there, like you said, so many women go out all the time, and I won't like cut to the chase of what she was trying to say, because definitely tell her story in the way that she told it. But for what ends up happening, I do think that it was good that she drew attention to where it was.
Yeah, I do too. But like everything that
I know,
she said,
it's not the camp's fault or the track's fault. Yeah.
It's hard. It's very hard to kind of point fingers more widely than the perpetrator, isn't it? It's kind of like, what do we do there? And I know she was, so I spoke to her a couple of days after this had happened, which is why we kind of know quite a lot about it, but we know about it from her perspective. Everything about it was an absolute shocker and just completely chilling, actually, wasn't it? It was really chilling. So she was talking about, when she spoke to us, she said that on the Tuesday, she'd gone for a run at sort of 8 o'clock in the morning along a dirt track. But it's not as kind of basic as that sounds. It is a dirt track that lots of runners use, because it's very flat and it's a specific kind of distance. So everyone uses it as a kind of, she was doing some kind of repeats on that loop from the hotel. And she was attacked by a guy. So a guy just came out of nowhere. He'd been hiding in sort of bushes, and he came and dragged her off and attempted to rape her. And she managed to escape that attack there were sort of a couple of things. One of the main things was that as he pushed her to the ground, her Garmin did that sort of incident detection thing, and immediately started doing a kind of a beep noise, that kind of high beep noise that it does when you fall over. Thank God.
Oh my God.
So the guy didn't understand what that was doing. Alison had the strength of mind to say it's contacting the police, which it actually wasn't, which scared him enough that he grabbed her watch and then ran off with it. And she in later days, she was sort of saying, actually, if he had any kind of knowledge of like trackers or GPS or whatever, that he wouldn't want to take the watch, because obviously he would then be tracked. But he took it and ran off, but not before he had caused her significant kind of harm physically. Like, he pushed her to the ground so hard that her contact lenses had fallen out.
It's awful. I mean, it's absolutely awful.
Absolutely horrific. And he absolutely scared the shit out of her. She really did honestly fear for her life. What was really chilling. So this happened. She was then looked after by a couple of other runners who came along a few minutes later when she'd kind of emerged, kind of thing. But then she went back with the police, who turned up sort of fairly swiftly, and she discovered, and I think this was the bit that really got to us, wasn't it? That she discovered that this guy had laid out a tarpaulin and there was a bottle of water next to it to the side of the road. Like the preparation for this attack was fucking awful. It wasn't like he just in that minute thought, this is what I'm going to do. That he was preparing. And then all of that was compounded when I was talking to her, because she was really angry, as you'd imagine. She was really upset and she was really scared and she was really angry. And one of the things she was angry about was that the concern that that the local police were treating it as an isolated incident, when immediately when she'd put that post out, she'd been contacted by a couple of runners who had used that track, who'd had a frighteningly similar experience, I think the year before. And she was saying there was no, of these runners, they were all very different. There was no discrimination in terms of kind of age or looks or anything like that. One of the people that had spoken to her had been a woman in her 60s, I think. And the descriptions of the guy, the descriptions of the preparation for the attacks were all like almost to the letter identical. So that was, anyway, it was just, I feel like I'm reading off a news report, and I don't need to be reading off a news report. But it's like, it's
how
fucking
else
terrifying.
Can you really tell it? It's her story. She told it really in great detail, very bravely, to you. And I don't really know what we can say about it apart from how utterly, utterly disgusting and awful. I really have thought about Alison every time I've been for a run since finding that out. And I think it has definitely shaken my sort of view on safety. I think so often, like, we talk about it a lot in our work. I think almost sometimes it's become this thing that feels a little bit, there's some slight distance from it. It's
you can feel removed.
Slightly removed. Feel like it's our duty to have this conversation from a moral standpoint, and we strongly, strongly believe that women should be able to go and run without fear for their lives, their safety, their fear of being harassed or shouted at or whatever. But I think, like, so often you forget how real that danger actually is, that this isn't just a philosophical discussion we're having about women's equality and women's rights. Like, there is a genuine danger that, like, we are unfortunately, like, in the firing line for, and it's awful to think.
So what do we do?
I don't know.
She was, when I was speaking to her, and she was just saying, you know, she obviously
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com. Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Wanted something, you could really feel it talking to her. She wanted something tangible, you know. She wanted him to be found and caught and banged up and kind of, you know, not, but she wanted something else, and you could see that she wanted something else, and I could really, really understand that. Like, she wants, this awful thing has happened, and because this awful thing has happened, what she wanted was someone important to be able to say, right, we're going to do that, that we are putting this measure in place and that will prevent this ever happening again. But the thing is, I mean, as she was talking to me, she was like, I don't know who that is. You know, is it the police? Is it England Athletics? Is it, you know, do we have to protect women more? Do we have to educate men more? I mean, what do we
always,
do?
Always, always. It's just disappointing, isn't it, to be reminded that it is an ongoing, like, thing, that it feels like something that we should be past and we should have solved, but it's not within our control like that. It is an ongoing thing that we have to keep working at and talking about all the time. I also really feel for her that she must be in this position right now where, like, obviously she told you, and she was quite honest on social media and stuff as well about the fact that she's had to cancel a race that she was going to do as a result of this experience. Like, she is definitely feeling a lot. She's feeling quite unsafe about running on her own, especially at night. And I really feel strongly this sense of rage for her, that that is her thing. And she is a fantastic runner, like you said, and she loves it and it's her life. And this person has taken that away from her. She is the person that's got to deal with the consequences of that, despite the fact that that was all his actions. I feel so angry about that, like, that wasn't a position that she fucking obviously chose to be in or ended up, like, that was all on him. And now she's the person that's got to have her life affected by it. And she's got to have to worry about running and worry about her safety and have a different association with running that this horrible, disgusting creature has put in her mind that has erased, like, years of her work towards being a confident and good runner, you know?
Absolutely. And it just that kind of feeling of sort of like it's been taken away from her, and she's now sort of like handicapped. She's, there's nothing, like, what can she do? You know, she feels voiceless and like unable to kind of, I don't know, what can she do? What can she actually literally physically do to make things any better for herself, other than, you know, access some therapies or kind of, you know,
it's like all a plaster that we put on, isn't it, after the fact that, like, the direct harm has been caused by the perpetrator. And yet it's always on the victim to have to put the pieces back together again. And I think that's the thing that makes me so cross. And I know what is the answer, because even if he is banged up forever, which he fucking should be, like, I still think that it doesn't erase what happened. You can't ever take back what happened there. And I just, that lack of control around that and the unfairness of that is what I think really fucking gets to me. Like, why on earth should it be Alison who's got to be raising awareness about this, speaking to journalists, making sure that other women feel safe, like, going to therapy, like, getting herself patched up, like, thinking about her future as a runner and cancelling various races and blah, like, why on earth is she doing all this work? What's that fucking guy doing? What's he doing? Like,
but I mean, and in the meantime, what can we do? And I hate this, because this happens every single time whenever we hear about some awful thing that's happened to a woman who's been out running. That I know we all do it, like, working here, we're all like, right, what can we do? What can we do? What campaign can we start? Who can we talk to? How can we bring about change? Because we have a platform and we should use it and all that sort of thing. But I must admit, it's getting to a bit where, you know, we've been in this for 5 years, lots of awful things have happened to lots of women. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel like we've made any progress. I feel completely sort of hand-tied. I don't know what we can do to make it, because I still have conversations with men where a response is very much, it's not all men. That does happen still. Mm-hmm. And people, men can be very defensive about their goodness. And it's like, okay, that I understand that. And I know it might feel like I'm attacking all men, and I'm not. Mm-hmm. But the fact remains that we cannot tell the difference when we're running between the attacker that attacked Alison and someone else that's good. 100%.
100%. I also think it's, I've been thinking about this a lot at the moment in general, that like how unsafe I think I feel with, and I hope this makes sense to any men who are listening, that like with the idea of men in general, because so many of the men in my life are not those men, like it almost feels, it's really weird because I am so like used to feeling relatively trusting and not really necessarily, I think naively, not really necessarily noticing the difference in gender and in the way that we behave and the way that we've been brought up and the way we see ourselves or our bodies or whatever, because of the fact that we are different genders. I think I have lots and lots of friends who are very supportive of women if they're men, lots of queer friends, lots of people that I think I'm very, very lucky with my general, like, I don't know, what's the word I'm after? Like my little pool of men in my life. And when I get reminded that there are men that exist that still do feel very starkly different about men and women, who view women's bodies in a way that makes me feel really uncomfortable, who like think about, I don't know, who just do this stuff that is completely unthinkable to us as women, but also to us for imagining the men that we know and love behaving in that way, that it does feel so frightening and so alien. Because obviously we did a campaign around this a few years ago, the We Will campaign, we encouraged men to pledge something that they would do to make women feel safer, whether that's like educating their sons or not shouting things out at women and or whatever. Most of these men, being perfectly honest, who actually participated in this are men who are already supportive of women and understand the way that women do and don't want to be viewed and the way that women like should be treated and view women as equals the majority of the time. How do we reach the people? How do we reach the scumbags? That's what I want to know.
That's the thing, isn't it? That's the thing. It's how do we, and it's not even the scumbags, it's the gray area towards the scumbag, isn't it?
Yeah. How do we reach the men who don't think that they are a scumbag? Like maybe some people who commit horrible, horrible acts like rape genuinely don't realize how awful they are. But I think somebody like Alison experienced, that is a very, very sick individual. What about the people who are not quite there, but
Exactly. Like, do you remember?
Or in the danger zone, you know?
Yeah. Because I remember after there'd been an attack on Clifton Downs in Bristol, and I was speaking to Mel Bound from This Woman Runs at the time. And so this woman had been part of that community, and she'd spoken to the police, and they had a really good police commissioner at the time, or whoever their police spokesperson was, who said, if you are heckled, so this woman, I think, she'd been grabbed, right? So she'd had this really unpleasant experience, really horrible, and she was really shaken up by it. But this police woman was saying, if you have been heckled, if you've been shouted at, then please report it to the police. And unfortunately, obviously, this isn't the case like nationwide. It does depend on you know, where you live. It's one of those postcode lottery things, depending on if your police service is going to give two shits about this or not. But what she was saying in Bristol was, if you are heckled, please phone in and report it. Chances are, literally, they won't be able to do anything about it, but they will log it. And what they're logging is behavior, and they want to keep an eye on it, because she was talking about this was quite chilling as well, was the escalation of behavior, that if someone heckles and they don't get any comeback from it, that behavior can escalate and get worse and worse and worse.
It's exactly like not
always.
Yeah, it's like, I know it sounds silly, but like calling it, it doesn't sound silly. No, stop trying to make myself seem smaller there. It is like, if you're somebody who, like, hears your friends making jokes that you're uncomfortable with, or like, yeah, like, I really don't want to call him out by saying this, but to keep the details vague, like, Doug has definitely had situations where he's been in environments with all men and he's ended up doing things or laughing at things or saying things that he was like, holy shit, like, that's not me. Like, I would never behave like that. But it is so easy to get carried away sometimes with,
yes,
what might seem funny or what might seem harmless. Fucking call your friends out if you hear them making jokes about that are at women's expense, or if you hear them being like, I don't know, just, I guess, behavior that generally contributes to these patriarchal ideals that make us, that make women feel inferior to men and feel frightened of men, and that make men feel that they get some sort of kick out or empowerment out of belittling women. Call it out, however little it feels, because exactly, I think it can escalate so easily. And before you know it, somebody who you could never imagine being like hurtful towards women can suddenly be saying and doing things that like is not okay. And, you know, I think nobody's going to think that you're a stick in the mud by being like, that's not very funny, mate. Let's talk about something else.
Yeah, I know. I think it does take a degree of bravery to be that guy.
It does. It really does.
That says,
we've
that.
Sat there and laughed in like in meeting or whatever. If somebody has said something and you're like, ha ha ha, I don't really know what else to do apart from laugh at this. This is so awkward. But you know, comedy does not need to rely on taking the piss out of people. Power does not need to be taken by making another person feel small. And let's all just be a bit more confident in our own fucking skin and our ability to be like, no, thank you. I choose not to participate in that. I feel like I'm very philosophical about it all, but
no.
It does come back to these quite philosophical roots, doesn't it? It can't help but make you feel that like this is the devastating escalation of something that could potentially have started in a way that is frighteningly common, you know.
Yes, absolutely. That's the thing, isn't it? And and it does feel like when we were doing the We Will campaign, it did feel like those were the two directions that we needed to go in. And one was educating sons, because the main perpetrators of making women feel uncomfortable while running, so I'm not talking about attacks necessarily, not physical attacks, but the people that were kind of that were chucking out the words that were making people feel uncomfortable, women feel uncomfortable when they were running, mostly that was teenage boys. So a lot of it was about educating kids, but then the other one was having those uncomfortable conversations down the pub, because things could be said in a private sphere. So you could have friends that say things that are uncomfortable about women in a private sphere, and that's one thing, and if you pick them up on that, then good for you. But picking up on those comments when that person who's making them could be overheard by a woman or is actively trying to make a woman feel uncomfortable, that's a whole other thing. And it's just those two things, they're so difficult to do, because one of them is a massive long game, another one is potentially ending a friendship.
I know.
So it's, oh God. And none of it is, well, not none of it actually, but lots of it is just not in our control. But in a way, isn't it great to be talking about the actions that men can be doing to make us feel safer, rather than constantly saying, oh, let's run in packs. Let's wear bright clothing. Let's go for a run, at lunchtime, and let's avoid this, that, and the other.
No, absolutely not. I'm afraid anybody listening who might feel the need to say that to a woman, just letting you know, we are done. We are not we're not going to be doing that. We're not going to be adjusting our behavior anymore. Just stop being a prick. New campaign.
Ooh, love it.
Nice.
Yeah, snappy. Nice.
I was going to say, I do feel that we would be remiss not to mention, not to change the tone, but this is still very, this is the woman's hour episode. This is the...
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't it?
I feel we have really just encapsulated all the things that we need to about women and gender identity as women.
Yeah.
But let's talk about Jasmine, because Jasmine. I think that people are going to be like, your silence on Jasmine is deafening.
Oh my God. Oh my, have you watched the video of that last kind of 10 seconds of her
I've
run?
I've actually seen no video footage.
Fucking hell. So, you, I mean, you've seen the pictures of the,
yes,
of her,
I've seen
last,
the pictures,
like clutching the yellow gate. So obviously we're, you know, we are talking about Jasmine Paris. We're talking about Barclay Marathons. We're talking, this only happened like, when did it happen? End of last week?
It was Friday, I think it was like Saturday. A Friday night, because I had to get up on Saturday morning. Not complaining.
That's right.
But I did have to get up on Saturday morning and write the news story.
You did.
So if anybody spotted a spelling mistake, I shan't be hearing anything about it. It was 7:30 and I'd had no coffees.
Yeah. And you did an amazing job. You did an amazing job. In fact, I mean, I'd say that your efforts were kind of up there with Jasmine's.
Oh, thank you so much. Awards, please, for my behavior. Thank you.
My pleasure.
It was really tough.
There is amazing video. So she's talked about, she was even in an interview, not with us, but she was mentioning yesterday or the day before about how that last kilometer, and bearing in mind this is 100 miles, but that the last kilometer, it sort of slightly traumatized her. And
oh God.
It's because she knew, so she had to try and do this 100 mile race under 60 hours, and she did it with 99 seconds to spare, as you wrote in your story, which is incredible.
Insane.
And she's the first ever woman to have done this, and only one of 20 to have ever successfully completed those 5 loops. It's a fucking bonkers race. It's horrible. And I think the elevation, it's not just the elevation. I mean, it's up, up, vertical up, but it's also, there's the terrain. She was talking about on the first loop, there was a bit where they were scrambling on their stomachs over patches of it. It was so vertical, but it was covered in brambles. And you could see them all after that first loop. Their legs were all shredded. So you had all of that.
Brutal.
But while you're running around, you're having to find pages of a fucking book that are hidden in weird specific places to bring them back.
I missed that out of the story because I was like, this could be a fever dream. But yeah, am I right in thinking that in order to prove you've done each loop, you have to find a page of a book? This race is whack.
It is whack. It's exactly and you know how it starts. Yeah, you know how they all know when to start.
They light a cigarette, right? It's a Camel cigarette.
He lights a fag. Yeah.
Of this stuff could have gone in the story, guys. But yeah, I was really trying to get the bare bones out.
But I think she, bless her, in that last kilometer, when you talk about seeing people that are in a pain cave, her pain cave must have been absolutely fucking massive. You can see pain written over every inch of her face. She looks in such agony. And when she collapses at the gate at the end, you see her gasping for breath. She looks like a landed fish, because she doesn't have enough oxygen left in her. She has given everything. So she's gasping so much to get more oxygen in her body. And you just think, that honestly doesn't look as if it's done you much good.
No, I have to say, like, super quick, like, addition to this, because I don't want this to take away from Jasmine's achievement, because it is, like, absolutely insane that she's
phenomenal.
Managed to do this. Insane. But I did read something. I read an interesting critique of the Barclay Marathons, and it was actually generally talking about potential, like, racism and other stuff going on that we will hopefully talk about more at some point. But one of the main things that it did say was, like, it is quite shocking that nobody's died. And, like, I'm not calling for an end. I don't know enough about Barclay Marathons to do that. But I'm just throwing that out there, that, like, I do think that this is, like, insane that people do this, because it's not to be undermined, the fact that, like, this is, like, yeah, potentially like life threatening some of this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And so different from like, you know, it, like if you were to take on like a massive triathlon, or you were to talk to do like a huge kind of ultra elsewhere, you'd have checkpoints, and you know, it's sorry for the coughing.
No, don't worry.
Shock,
she's got COVID. Coughing. Everybody, cancel her for spreading.
I promise I haven't. But it's a shocker, an absolute shocker. And I was even like the other day, I was just thinking about what it would be like to do just one of those five loops. Like it would crush any normal fit runner. It would be crushed by one of those loops, would see it quite rightly as a massive achievement to have completed it at any time, because of the vertical ascent, the weirdness of having to find bits of the navigation. The other thing is that you're not, I think I'm right in saying that you're not allowed to have GPS.
No, you're so not. You have reason. A map beforehand that like you are allowed to look at for a certain amount of time before the race. It's like a couple of weeks or something. And I think you're allowed to bring like the map with your annotations, or you're at least allowed to bring like drawings or notes or something that you've made off the back of the map. But yeah, you're not allowed GPS.
And yeah, so there's some kind of another.
Well, how come no one's just like still out there wandering the woods that we found? This sounds so dangerous.
It's so dangerous. So I mean, so dangerous, and still like it just makes it all the more remarkable, doesn't it?
I think it really does. It's incredible.
Mm-hmm. People are calling for her to be Sports Personality of the Year.
And imagine new campaign. Okay, we've got several campaigns to work on. If anybody would like to apply for the position of campaign manager at Women's Running, then get in touch, because we've got a lot we want to achieve. I personally think if we had a long distance runner, an ultra runner, as the Sports Personality of the Year.
Oh my God.
I know.
Insane. That would be amazing. And someone that had previously been on the cover of Women's Running.
I know. That you have spoken to. Or actually, have you? Or was it Rach who did the interview?
I have spoken to her. I spoke to her on the podcast.
You did? Yeah. Friend of the pod, being a Sports Personality of the Year. Incredible. Well,
incredible.
It'll be us next. I find it so funny that I work in like sports media.
Sport.
I know.
I know.
So jokes.
Yeah. But moving on from sports media, we've had a few letters, haven't we?
I think we've got about time. Unprofessionally asking you, have you got time before you got to go off to your next
nasty appointment?
Next nasty appointment.
Yes. Definitely got time for a couple.
Okay. I might read some. There are some brilliant ones, guys, this week, but I think I'm going to choose the slightly shorter ones because I'm conscious of your time. First of all, I wanted to shout out Samantha May, who was responding to our conversations about how we really need some new running music, like we need new Christmas music. And she said, had to get in touch with all the music chat on the pod recently. First up, race music. Totally agree. We need to sort that one right out. I did a race this weekend and they played so much Jess Glynn that I thought I'd accidentally gone on a Jet 2 holiday by mistake. Nightmare. she does add, he hadn't gone on a Jet 2 holiday and she still in fact had 10 miles of Milton Keynes in front of her.
We've
been there, not specifically there, but she said, secondly, Hol, I love you, but I need you to put some respect on Masquerade from Phantom of the Opera. Absolute banger. Sometimes you just gotta agree to disagree with the people you love the most. My choir concert was actually a roaring success, guys, but I'll have to tell you all about it another time. And Masquerade, you know what, Samantha May? Masquerade did actually go down pretty well, and it wasn't too much of a screech fest, and we don't have to perform it again ever, I believe. We can retire that one. So
can you give us a couple of notes from Masquerade?
Masquerade goes, oh God, well, as a soprano in it, it goes, Masquerade!
Christ.
I know. I was having that up a little bit, but genuinely it's screech-a-thon. Masquerade! Paper faces on parade! Masquerade! It's horrible. Sorry, Samantha. Hate it. Okay. And then finally, I know you have to go to the hygienist because you're very hygienic.
I am hygienic. Yeah.
But this is from Alex, who is a snot rocket sympathizer. Ready to have your worldview rocked. Women's running, presenting two sides of a debate. I like that. I feel like we're sort of, you know, we're like middle ground, providing genuine debate between two sides. Anyway, sure. What am I doing? Right.
Yeah.
Hi, ladies. I've just gone through the episode when you chatted with disgust about snot rockets. I'm here to explain a little bit from my point of view. Of course, I do not agree with doing it, being surrounded by plenty of people during races or park runs, but in some cases, it's really inevitable to do from time to time. I'm naturally a nose breather, which is why we don't relate.
Oh.
Yeah, because we're dumb Neanderthal mouth breathers.
But who breathes through their nose when they're running? I think that's
Alex,
crazy.
Apparently. I know. That this has honestly changed my world. I'm naturally a nose breather when I run. Mostly, I breathe through my nose, meaning if it's cold outside, my nose keeps getting humid inside due to cold air getting in and warm air getting out, causing constant wetness with the time, making it impossible to breathe due to congestion. Of condensation of the water. And yes, I call it water because it's nothing else really. Okay, that also kind of explains things. Not maybe so much snot that we think. Always before my run, I clean my nose, like probably a lot of people to have pure breathing abilities. I guess that means clear airways. But as soon as I get out, it's a matter of minutes before I get a runny nose just because of the air. On my solo runs, I don't use tissues as there's no point. I just clean on the go as required. When I run with someone, I always check with the person if they're all right with me doing a so-called snot rocket. And each time I'll say sorry about that after being polite. But yes, during races and park run, I would have a tissue or use a sleeve or glove to keep it clean. But you can imagine it is making the run a little more difficult. But like I say, for people who naturally breathe through the nose, it is inevitable, and I do need to do it often. I do need to do it as needed. Sorry, bad reading from me. Due to oxygen required. Sorry, I should have read this properly before I'm reading it out to you.
No, that's okay. So the whole issue is we basically couldn't fathom why anyone would do it because we breathe through our mouths, and so it just doesn't affect us.
Yeah,
is that it?
Yeah. Well, that's pretty much it. She actually finishes by saying, and I do think this is an important point for the debate. I don't feel like it's something we shouldn't speak about. It might sound gross, but with people I know, I feel comfortable doing it around. I don't feel like I'm doing something wrong, but definitely looking forward to warmer days so that snot rockets can be left forgotten.
I also didn't realize it was seasonal, but there we go.
Snot rocket winter, hot girl summer, snot rocket winter. Yeah.
You learn so much on this podcast, don't you?
I know.
It's quite educational. I mean,
I love us all. I love women and I love men who love women in a loving way rather than a weird, horrible way.
Yeah. So you love men that love women if they're producing snot rockets.
It's maybe
still not nice though. It's any ejection of bodily anythings is not nice, is it, to witness? I think that's basically the issue with it.
Bodily excretions feel like they should be private, but then some can't, I suppose. Sweat. If you saw someone with a bunch of sweat, if you saw someone wipe their brow.
Yeah.
And
fling it to the side.
And fling it to the side. How would you feel about that?
I would be so impressed by the level of sweat that they were able to kind of like grab and fling. I'd be like, wow, you have chunky sweat.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I will let you go to the hygienist. I'm sorry. I'm really conscious of your time.
Thank you, Hall.
She squeezed us in, guys, for an hour of her busy schedule.
I did. Oh, God. Please wish me luck. I'm terrified for this particular.
I know. It's going to be okay. And have a lovely, spoiler alert, not spoiler alert, they all know it's coming up, breaking of the fourth wall. We're actually recording this before the Easter weekend. Have a lovely Easter.
Oh my God, chocolate time.
I know, I can't wait. Chocolate time. Chocolate time, wine time, sitting around time, running 9 miles time for me at some point, but whatever. That'll be a small amount for the weekend.
We haven't talked about our running at all, have we?
Absolutely not. We'll have to do it next time.
Sorry, guys.
Thank you for listening. Come and join us on Patreon. You can get a ton of extra Pod Squad benefits from just £2 a month, including newsletters, live chats, and you can join our exclusive Discord community for friendly chat and support with like-minded women runners. Go to patreon.com/womensrunning to find out more. This podcast was recorded over Zencastr. The producer and composer was David Newman. Please hit like and subscribe. That way you won't miss the next episode. And do please email us at wrpodcast@anthem.co.uk with any questions or running stories, as we would love to include them in a future podcast. Happy running.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.